This is a pre-recorded version of the WTKA Roundtable on WTKA, unsurprisingly, 9 o'clock Thursdays. It is recorded, however, so if you call in, no one will answer.
We are back, folks, here on the Michigan Insider Sports Talk 1050 WTKA online at WTKA.com. We are live on location today at UTEC. Now, if you don't know about UTEC, they are a company here in Ann Arbor that will manage the technology structure of your business. Copiers, printers, scanners, computers, servers, presentation display boards, your intra-office network, they handle all of that. And you got to understand, the guy who started this company, the owner, the head honcho, he used to be a Buckeye. Now he walked in and said, the Buckeyes suck. I hate Ohio State. He has fully invested in becoming and being a Wolverine. He hates Ohio State. He feels like, he told me, he said, that my company is too sophisticated to be based in Columbus. Why would I serve people who still, they're still on stone tablets, Mr. Weintraub. They just can't handle all of the technology that we bring to the table at UTEC. So he didn't set up shop in Columbus. He set up shop in Ann Arbor. We love Kevin Van Cannell around here as he's hosting us again for our March Hoops action. And we are with our friends from the MGO Blog Roundtable, who unfortunately, like me, have to watch this tournament, and all of you watching us on YouTube have to watch this tournament without Michigan being in it. I guess it's not easy to take, but a little easier because I didn't expect them to make it, fellas. And I did expect them to win the first game in the Big Ten tournament, though, and that didn't happen either, starting with the man who started it all over at MGO Blog, Brian Cook. Brian, how are you this morning?
I mean, what are you talking about? Michigan's in the tournament. The only one that counts.
They're in the 16. They're in the round of 16 right now. Six years in a row.
Round of 16, 6 years in a row. Who else can say that?
Nobody. Seth actually broke down, folks, on YouTube, though. Seth broke down the NIT bracket. I mean, that's dedication, Seth. Dedication, man.
So I do my bracket assist tool every year, which is like you can like pull up every single team and see like, you know, who's the center, who's the guard, what kind of shots each guy takes. And it's really easy. You put them next to each other. You can see how teams compare to each other. And it's helped me win my bracket for years against all these financial guys that I'm in a tournament with every year. This year, I was doing it, and I'm like, oh, I can't. I got to do Michigan. So I did Michigan. And I'm like, all right, I'll do Clemson as well. And then I'll do Rutgers as well. And then I did the whole NIT. So it was a larger project this year than normal, but if you have takes about Hofstra, I'm here for your.
Well, look, fellas. We talked about this team enough this season to not dig deep into the loss to Rutgers. We saw a lot in that game of what we saw all season long. I'm more interested in your takes on some of the difficult questions that we know they have to deal with in the offseason. Let's assume, for the sake of argument, that the Big Three is going to come back. I'll get your maybe refresh takes on that a little bit later. But I want to start with Hunter, Jet, and Kobe coming back. So what do you do as if you're the coach and you're trying to figure out this roster? How comfortable do you guys as Michigan supporters, Michigan lovers, with the idea of talking to guys on your roster and suggesting they go elsewhere? Are you comfortable with that proposition, Brian?
I mean, that's just part of the deal. And it's always been part of the deal. Like back in the 60s, it's like, you're not going to play here. Just go. And I mean, these days, Michigan can essentially import whoever they want without regard to scholarship restrictions. So these conversations are no longer like we're essentially cutting you. These conversations are, you can stay here, but we don't really see a path to a lot of playing time for you. And that, I think, is a realistic, I think that's not a wrong thing to do, right? Because if you're just being honest, like if I was on this team and Juwan Howard sat me down and is like, you're 6 foot two and 240 pounds, you can't play basketball for me, I'd be like, okay, yeah, I get it, right? So there's going to have to be some reckonings, I think, after the season. But primarily, I think the main reckoning has to be with Jet Howard himself. Because when Jet Howard doesn't play, this team is not worse. And he's missed, what, you know, 5, 6, 7 games this year. Michigan's record in those games is great. So, like, I think he has to kind of sit down and kind of have a hard look at how he plays basketball and how he can contribute to make this team a winner. That's the conversation that I think is the hardest one, because that's Juwan Howard's son. But I think over the course of the season, it's been proven that he's really not playing winning basketball. And so, you know, I would welcome him back as long as he kind of like looks in the mirror and he's like, okay, this isn't going to do it. This isn't going to do it in college. This isn't going to do it in the NBA.
Yeah, I think there's no question he has aspects of his game to improve on, but there's also no question if that dude was to, I mean, he's going to be back, right?
No, yeah, no question about that. But, you know, I mean, this guy, you know, Michigan plays without him against Toledo, and it doesn't really seem to matter. And they had that 3-game winning streak while he was on the bench, and then he's back, and it doesn't really seem to improve the team. So that's concerning, right? It's got to be concerning for everybody involved with the program.
Yeah. Look, I think with Jet, an interesting thing for him to weigh is, from a development standpoint, does it, man, we kind of went over this last week, from a development standpoint for him and for the team, is it a better proposition for him to come back and help those things? Does he help those things by coming back, or does he help those things by leaving? I mean, that's a real conversation. You know, is it better for you and your development to just go to the NBA and further your preparation there? I happen to think not, but that doesn't mean that it's not a conversation that they have to sit down and have, Greg.
Yeah, I hear what Brian is saying. It's hard to look at this team and say, oh, yeah, we're a lot better with Jet, you know, but I think we are. And I think we may be next year. There are certain things that Jet can do pretty easily to become a much better basketball player. Here's one: pay some attention to the game. For example, the score's 39-40 in the Rutgers game, and they're shooting free throws. First one is made, the second one is bricked, and no one boxes out the shooter. Now the people calling the game blame Hunter Dickinson for this, which has to be the most idiotic take I've ever heard on a basketball game ever. No, it's not Hunter's responsibility to block out the shooter. It's either Doug or Jet, but it's clearly not Doug, because Doug is boxing out another guy and Jet is wandering around to the backcourt paying no attention to what's going on. And meanwhile, the guy waltzes in for a layup, and we give away 2 points. And it seemed to be a sort of turning point in the game, with everyone looking at each other like, what the hell is going on here? Mm-hmm. So, I mean, getting Jet to play and to pay attention, and this isn't singular. This is something that's gone on the entire season. Often he just doesn't seem to be paying attention. Now, I wonder how much with Jet on defense is because of his ankle and he hasn't been healthy. I just don't know. But if you watch his footwork over the course of the year, he crosses his feet on defense. His feet actually cross. And you can't play defense with your feet crossing. You've got to get into a wider stance. Your toes, you have to move. And you know, so can he learn that in the NBA? Sure. Can he learn it in Ann Arbor? Yeah. Is he a remarkably good shooter who can get the ball off in traffic? Yeah, he can do that. And that's a rare skill, and it's why the NBA is interested in him. He's also a pretty good passer. But his defense is an abomination. He's not alone on this team. And his And his ability to pay attention is bizarre. So, you know, yeah, I want him back because I think there's a great upside there. But yeah, Brian's right. It's hard to look at it and say we play better, a lot better with him. In fact, at best, it's a push.
Yeah, look. Yeah. Go ahead, Seth.
No, like my problem with it is like if Jet had just been playing in some podunk school in West Virginia and he comes in looking like this, we'd be like, that's a freshman. The problem is that what he looked like the first half of the season is just an embarrassment for IMG. They're supposed to be a development center. Mm-hmm. They're supposed to be like next step to the pros. And he comes out here and he's playing like he's never seen defense played in basketball. And that's a problem for a lot of kids coming out of high school. It shouldn't be a problem for a guy who came out of IMG and has been around as many pros as Jet has. Second half of the season, now it's an embarrassment for his father. And if he goes to the NBA, it's going to be another embarrassment. I think Juwan has some hopes of going back to the NBA one day, and they see your kid playing like that in the NBA. That's a league that talks to each other. And my God, if you think you can get away in not playing defense in the NBA or having
you can. You can absolutely get away.
On a team that's tanking, sure.
Come on, man. I think this is hyperbole to the nth degree. He'll be a first round pick if he jumps in the draft, and the offense stirs the coffee, and they figure, you know, you'll learn defense or you'll be a specialist or you'll watch out. Think about this, man. I mean, think about the 3-point shooters that have lasted in the NBA, and they couldn't play a lick of defense in college. But he doesn't just want to be a 3-point specialist. Right. He aspires to be. They think he can be a star caliber player. Well, you got to play both ends. You got to do more than just be a shooter. And I agree. It has been a lesson in focus for him this season on the defensive end of the floor, especially. I think he does. He's like a lot of freshmen. I think it doesn't matter if they come from IMG. You look at AAU, you look at any of these all-star exhibitions, none of these dudes really play defense. Do you get into an environment where that is not just an accountability thing from the coaching staff, but it's a culture on the roster, a culture for the team on the court? And that's something that they're still trying to grow. What I would say about him is I look at Kobe, and Kobe was an absolute sieve defensively last year. could not stay on the court. It was atrocious what he was on the court defensively last year. And he focused on it in the offseason. It was important to him to improve there. I think if Jet has the same focus, if it is as important to him as it was to Kobe in the offseason, there's every reason to believe that he will be better too. Now, do I think he'll ever be the defender that Kobe becomes? No, I think Kobe is a different athlete than Jet. But he certainly can be better than he is now just by focusing on it more. And you have to believe if, you know, he's going to be a pro and as a pro coach, that's something that he will do in the offseason if he decides to come back to Michigan.
I mean, yeah. I'm wondering about the predicate of your question. I mean, or the whole predicate of this hypothesis that Hunter, Jet, and Kobe are coming back. I mean, is that at all realistic? I mean, it might be as realistic that none of them come back.
I put it this way. Mm-hmm. When a couple of weeks ago, when I was hearing from scouts, he's a lottery pick, I gave it very little chance. I think we've seen transpire over the past few weeks with Kobe and Jet especially, and maybe the question marks that were, you know, kind of, you know, the question mark kind of getting a little bolder, and maybe it being more in question where they fall. I don't see or hear many scouts talking about Jet being a lottery pick anymore. First round, sure, but not in the lottery. Mm-hmm. And I remember talking to some coaches about this, saying, if you're a lottery pick, you definitely go. I don't care the circumstances. I don't care if, you know, your son is a coach. I don't care if you got things to improve upon. You're a lottery pick, you go. But if he's not a lottery pick, there's every reason to believe that you could come back, improve enough to be a lottery pick, and improve to stick. This is what I focus on, Brian, in this assessment. If we were just making it a pure basketball assessment, sure, it's great to be drafted in the first round and get started towards your second contract. But what if you never, what if you get there and you can't stick and you never make it there? Then what did you leave for? You got that first contract and nothing else.
Well, yeah, I mean, that, nobody thinks like that, though. That's the thing. Everybody's like, oh, I gotta get the second contract so I can get my $100 million. Yeah, but the situation here is a little bit different than it usually is, right? Because this is the son of Juwan Howard. Like, money's not really going to play a huge factor in their decision. It's just not. So it's going to be about, like, what's best for the family, what's best for Jet Howard's NBA career. And I think you can make a case that if he, you know, buckles down, matures a little bit as a player, and really solidifies himself as a lottery pick, that he'll have much more runway to make mistakes and grow in the NBA. Because once you get into those late first round, you're on a good team. Maybe you're in the G League. You start bouncing around a little bit. You kind of get lost in the shuffle. And like, it just seems like it might make sense for Jet Howard to come back when it wouldn't make sense for, you know, a Bones Highland to remain in college. Because that first contract for Bones Highland is life-changing in a way that it is just not for Jet Howard.
Yeah, I hear you. I hear you. And again, to be clear, the take on him being leaving as a lottery pick, they are all of those points, his family being rich, you know, all those things were taken into account. So if you're a lottery pick, you just go. You just go. You aren't going to improve your stock that much. You go and you get your career started. But I just don't hear that talk being as prevalent anymore. Sure, he's too good a shooter to last past the first round. But again, I think he can be more than a shooter. I guess for me, I think the dude has superstar lottery pick ability. I think he can put it on the deck. He is a lights out shooter. I think he can create for others. I think he could become better and more explosive athletically. But the biggest transition is what Craig pointed out. It's focus and emphasis. You know, I've seen Jet focus and emphasize dribbling. He is a much better dribbler now. And when he doesn't do it, it's a settle, right? But he is a much better guy putting it on the deck now than he was 2 years ago, right? I think with the same kind of focus and emphasis, he can be a better defender. It just has to be important to him, and I think it will be.
Yeah, and I think it's a situation where, like, we saw him develop. Like, when he was recruited, the people were just like, yeah, he's a standstill, he's a shooter, that's it. And we've seen him evolve into a guy who is a good secondary playmaker. So it's clear that his game is not at an end. He's still developing as a player. And I think if he comes back, he can maybe not be a great defender next year, but he can definitely improve massively. And if he improves massively on that end of the floor, then yeah, he's an all Big Ten player. He might be an all American type player. So like, I know we've been a little bit harsh on Jet Howard, but that's just because, I mean, you see the potential. And like, he doesn't have to be Franz Wagner on the defensive end of the floor to be like an excellent player. He just has to be okay. And he has to box out on free throws and, you know, just do all that really basic stuff that currently he's not really doing.
I don't think you're, put it this way. I bet you his dad's harder on him than anything said here. You wonder, I've often wondered this, you know, when it's your dad. You know, does it resonate more when it's someone else? Like when it's your teammates, it might resonate more when it's your teammates anyway, but especially when your dad is the coach, I wonder, do you get to the point of hearing it so much where it's like, that's just dad kind of thing. I'm not saying that he doesn't listen to his dad,
all
but
the sons
I wonder if it kind
of
gets old,
like tryharders, right? Like it's very weird to have the son of an NBA guy. Because we haven't hit this type of coach didn't even exist until Juwan and Jerry Stackhouse. I know we got two of the first two are kind of showing how it goes, but like this is not what you expect out of a coach's son. Jace is what you expect out of a coach's son.
Well, that's because coaches' sons are generally not gifted 6'8" flowing.
Yeah.
Shooters. Like, yeah. That's not, I mean, they're like Doug McDermott, where the only way that they get to be good basketball players is just to be, you know, Will Cheddar, except 3 inches taller.
Well, here's what I want you to ponder, because look, if Jet wants to come back, he's coming back. We all know that, right?
Yeah.
The questions really surround some other guys. So now Joey Baker wants a 6-year. Would you ask Joey Baker back? Think about that in a break. Jalen Llewellyn, right? What if he wants to come back? Do you ask him back? A lot of fans really are ready to they think that Terrence Williams brings nothing to the table in any role. No, my premise has been, I think in a different role than they put him into this year, Terrence Williams could be a valuable member of this team. A lot of fans don't share that opinion. Who would you have, you know, would you have discussions with those guys about whether they return, or would it just be limited to your, you know, the guys outside of the rotation that you had those conversations with? Think about that as we get to a break. We'll do that right now. Come back on the other side. More of the MGO Blog Roundtable here live from UTEC on Sports Talk 1050 WTKA, The Ticket.
Damn, Sam, I want to plead the fifth to that.
Tim and I had Tim and I had some discussions there, man. And, you know, I was point blank. I wouldn't right now go to Jalen Llewellyn and say there's definitely a spot. I would say it's possible there's a spot, but I wouldn't commit to that being where I landed. I'm going in the portal and I'm trying to get more athletic in his spot. I'm trying to get more athletic, you know, a guy that maybe is a better defender, which goes hand in hand with being more athletic as well. Just a better complement to Dougie. You know, right now you would say, all right, well, he's a better shooter than Dougie. I don't think so. I don't think so anymore. With the shooter that we've seen Dougie be over the course of this year. So he's not a better defender than Doug. He's taller than Doug, but that'll make him a better defender. I just don't know how he compliments Doug McDaniel at this point.
Look, Doug was ahead of him, in my opinion, last November. And Doug is definitely ahead of him now. I mean, Doug is a dog on defense. The you know, yeah, he's limited by his size. But that dude is trying and playing hard, and he's going to become more and more effective as a defender. And his turnovers and to assist realities are good. He was a 35% shooter from three. He didn't take a lot of bad shots. I mean, a few, but everybody does. Doug is the point guard, and Llewellyn just gets in the way. From what I've seen of him, and so I'm not sure. I like George Washington. I want to get him some minutes. I want to get him some minutes next year. You know, I don't want him to be a cipher. And so I don't know. I mean, I'm more concerned. What Brian said last week was prescient, more than prescient, that this is a 4-on-5 game with Michigan. They got nobody at the four.
Yeah, look, I don't think Terrence Williams can be your four. I'm right there with what everyone is thinking along those lines. Mm-hmm. But I think as a guy coming off the bench, giving you some energy and toughness off the bench, I mean, I think he can do that.
I mean, I remember that Tennessee game last year, and I was seething that he was not in the game.
Yeah, exactly.
Because Caleb Houston was not doing anything. And he comes in the game and he gets two putback buckets. Those are critical buckets. He helps Michigan win that game. And then he gets put in this position, and he's just like, as soon as his shot goes away, he doesn't really bring a whole lot else.
That's the thing. He was a 40% shooter last year. He's a 25% shooter this year. That's a huge 40% difference.
Shooter in a limited role. I think it's
going to be. Well, I mean, I don't know about that. I just think that the 40% was a bit of a mirage. Because it was a low sample size. So I think it's much closer to his actual shooting ability. Probably pessimistic a little bit, but I don't think he's a guy who's going to bounce back to 40% next year. So, yeah, you hit the portal, you look for a four. And if you are getting the three guys back, then what you're looking for in that four more than anything else is defense and rebounding. And just, like, put Race Thompson on this team.
Well, but
and Race Thompson is not even a great basketball player, but he's like really smart, and he like
I agree. Hey, you know what I'd like more? JB Shumate is a basketball player. Or JT Shoemate.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, he's a basketball player and fits perfectly on Michigan. I mean, that's a guy who can shoot the ball. He's 6'7". He's tough. Nobody wanted him out of high school. And
I think he's out of eligibility because he spent two
years. I think he's out of eligibility. I know, but that's, you know, he's the, and I think he's the number four player in the country on KenPom.
Yeah, in terms of offensive efficiency, yes.
In terms of offensive efficiency. But that's what the team needs, right? I don't care about usage. I care about a guy who's offensively efficient, who fits in with your team and can play the position, which he can. And how come we don't have that guy?
It's obvious because they locked in on the transfer that they thought they were going to get. And after Terrence Shannon thing went down, the transfer portal ended. One of the things I definitely stuck out to me while going through every single team in the tournament in the NIT is there are a lot of good basketball players out there. There are a lot of guys sitting on teams that are never going to do anything. There's a guy on Hofstra. There's two guys on Toledo, right? Any team you go to, there's a guy. And how Michigan made it through the entire portal season, and Terrence Shannon was the guy they locked in on, but they didn't get another guy. They didn't have a second guy they were working. They didn't have somebody else they were backing on. And there are so many guys they could have gotten.
It's hard to like lock in on a guy and then not get him after you got a commitment from him. I mean, they apparently contacted this BJ Mack kid from Wofford who looks pretty decent. I just don't know about his athleticism, but he rebounds. He doesn't turn the ball over. He scores pretty efficiently, at least at Wofford's level. Like, he's got a 2-year track record that's pretty good because he was also a very solid player last year for them. Shot 43% last year from three and 34 this year. So seems like a pretty decent option for that four spot.
Yeah. I mean, you can just scroll through this list and find 40 guys, right? You can whittle them down to dudes you can get into Michigan and guys who have the athleticism to play or whatever. But just going through this list, you can find 40. And then you can whittle that down to 10 guys that you could really use instead of it felt like there were two guys that we were looking at. And with Jalen Llewellyn, it was kind of the same thing. Like, there are so many good transfer point guards out there. And, you know, there's we don't really have to worry about that anymore.
About 30 seconds.
Doug's going to be great, but one of the things I noticed, too, go watch Kansas State and watch their point guard. What's his name again? It's on the tip of my tongue. And Marquise Noel. That's what Doug's going to look like in a few years. He's a fifth-year senior. He's like 5'8", 35% shooter, which is kind of where Doug, I think, is going to end up. And 40 assist rate, 21 turnover rate, 4% steal rate. Like, it's just that's what Doug's going to be. He's going to be a great small facilitator who's just so annoying to play on defense once he can see the offense.
And we are back, folks, here on the Michigan Insider Sports Talk 1050 WTKA online at WTK.com. Sam Webb, Mr. Ira Weintraub with me out here at UTEC, our home for March hoops here on Sports Talk 1050 WTKA online at WTK.com. MGO Blog Roundtable. So ask you guys tough questions, admittedly. You know, what direction would you go? Would you save a spot for Jalen Llewellyn? Would you make a spot for Joey Baker? Because you got to think about it. If the big three comes back, you got two freshmen coming in, you got to make a spot. I suppose you could do that now with Jace maybe becoming a walk-on. But would you save a spot for Jalen Llewellyn? Would you make a spot for Joey Baker? I mean, what would you guys do on those fronts? Understanding that you're already comfortable with talking to maybe some of the out of rotation guys about moving on. But if you're going to go in the portal, you still got to find some space elsewhere. So what would that mean for you with Jalen and with Joey?
So, I mean, I just feel like at this point you can tell guys that you can stay because we've got the money for that. But this is what we project your role to be this year. And so I'm not saying that Michigan's going to need to straight up cut anybody, but I do think personally, I'm going to have to talk to Terrence Williams and Will Cheddar and be like, we're going to go get a four in the portal. And there's going to be minutes behind that guy, but that's the role we project for you next year. And with Llewellyn, I think that depends a lot on if you get guys back, right? If guys go to the draft, then yeah, I mean, you're going to have some kind of role on this team. But Llewellyn, I mean, I do think that he's the most plausible backup point guard, but you got to tell him that that's what his role is going to be. Like, we're going to ride with Doug because he's shown enough, and you're going to maybe be a 10 to 15 minute guy, and that you're going to have to be happy with that. And if you're not, then well, this probably isn't the place for you.
Mm-hmm. Seth?
Yeah, I mean, that's okay, fair. I'm sorry, Seth. I'm just one thing. It seems to me from the reports this week that Michigan is all in on Joey Baker next year. I mean, it sure seems that way. It seems like not only is Joey applying, but Michigan is helping him apply. And they seem to be saying, hey, regardless of anything else, we love this kid and we want him on our team. And so that's got to go in your equation, because I think he only played four games at Duke, and I think it was early in the season. I think it's at least 50-50.
Coach K
in the season.
Straight up burned his red shirt. He had the guy enroll early, and then he burned his red shirt. Okay. Thanks, Coach K.
Well, you know, I think there's a 50-50 chance that the NCAA will...
I mean, the NCAA... At this point, the NCAA is like that meme about the security guard who's just kind of feeling the air around people.
Right.
I would guess that he'll get it, because the NCAA is just like, whatever. Austin Swankler, you played in the OHL, but we don't care.
Right. When it comes to Michigan, suddenly they decide they care about a hamburger. So who knows?
Yeah, I mean, that's fair. And that's why I'm calling it 50-50. But what seems clear to me is Michigan wants Joey Baker back. That's what it looks like to me. And
I mean, what are you going to get?
So you got to put that in your
equation. It's going to be Joey Baker again next year. There's no more. It's not going to develop Joey Baker into more of a player than he is right now. He's going to be Joey Baker again. What is Joey Baker? He's just a shooter, doesn't play defense.
Yeah, but that's a valuable guy on your bench for 10 to 12 minutes a game.
Sure.
I mean, that's.
Yeah.
And that's what he's expecting.
But at this point, you're having a hard time talking transfer portal and bringing a four in, because right now, if everybody comes back, you've got 15 guys.
No, the scholarship limits do not exist.
I know.
Get that in your head. Scholarship limits do not exist for Michigan anymore. If they want to carry 25 men's basketball players, they can do that. Now,
so you get some donor to just come in and make them walk-ons, right?
Right, yeah. I mean, that's it. Is like you're a Michigan basketball player. Here's your NIL for your scholarship. We're not talking about that. It's no longer a thing that we need to talk about. I mean, what we do need to talk about is like who they're going to get in the portal. And like, there's been a report that they reached out to BJ Mack from Wofford, and that guy is a really interesting player, because you look at him and you're statistically like, oh, he's a stretch four, and then you look at his highlight videos, and that guy's posting up, and he's a brute. Like, I don't know if he's going to be able to stay in front of a whole lot of guys, but if you want a rebounder, if you want a guy who brings a physical element to your offense and is able to shoot as well, I think he's a good fit. So, I mean, that would massively upgrade that four spot. So I think that's a guy to keep an eye on.
Okay.
So, Seth, real quick before we move on, sounds like you wouldn't save a spot for Joey Baker. Am I right?
No, I think that you have to know who you're going to get in the portal. I mean, at this point, I would have a, you know, director of portal operations or whatever you want to call them, right? Who has already made all the connections, already knows, already has an idea of who wants to come, of who you could possibly get. And once you have that landscape of what you think you can get, then you can kind of make that call. But like, Joey Baker is going to be Joey Baker. I don't think it's going to change things dramatically. If you can get Joey Baker back, fine. If you can't, you can find another 3-and-no-D guy. There's just the shooters come, you know, all over the league. You can find a guy like that.
All right. So real quick, just a tournament take. You got any team that you're high on? Any upset that you're picking? Do you think this is the year Purdue makes a run and finally gets the monkey off of Matt Painter's back? If you want any of those, since this is obviously the opening day for the NCAA tournament. For most of us anyway. Any takes on the tournament action? Let's start with you, Ryan.
I mean, I do think this is the year that Purdue makes a deeper run than they historically have. I am concerned about their point guard situation. And I am concerned about the fact that if they run up against a team that can really pressure, do ball denial stuff on the perimeter, harass guys coming up the court, that they won't have enough time to get into their sets with Edie. But on the other hand, this is a team that rebounds 38% of their misses. So a bad possession is only so bad. So I kind of feel like this is a year where Purdue fans are not mad at Matt Painter anymore.
Yeah, I got them going all the way until I have Kansas State going to the Final Four over them, but I just really like Kansas State. It's probably not a very strong take. It's just I needed to have an upset in there because I got a big league. But, like, that's he fixes a lot of the problems that you have. And their run is not that difficult. Like, they got a pretty good draw against teams like Duke, I think, is in there. Tennessee lost their point guard, so Tennessee's not going to be what, you know, they've been all season. No, so they don't have to face their 8-9 as Memphis and FAU, not two teams that I don't really believe in. So, like, they can – I think Kansas State can knock them out. Marquette can knock them out. But those are the – you know, on the other side of the bracket. So, by that point, you're already in the Elite Eight. That's fine for Painter, right?
Yeah. Craig? Right.
Ed Fang tells me to fade Kansas. So, I'm fading Kansas. I like UConn. But I'm a huge Purdue fan in this tournament. I've always liked Painter and how he behaves and how he deals with things. So I'm rooting for them. I'm skeptical of Purdue because of the backcourt, freshman backcourt. I'm not sure that's going to work well in their first NCAA tournament. But so I like Penn State too. Don't ask me why.
Yeah.
I like their coach. I like that team. There's something about that team so that's my super dark horse in this one is Penn State.
Well, I mean, Pickett's incredible, and yeah. That goes a long way. It's just that, I mean, their shot volume stuff is terrible.
Yeah, I know.
They are dead last in the country at offensive rebounding and dead last at forcing turnovers. I don't know how you do that. Like, oh no, sorry. There are 363 teams in D1, not 362. My apologies to Penn State.
Hey, so you guys know real quick, you're my hockey. This is an unfair question to ask you at the very end, but maybe I'm setting it up for next week. I asked Spath this yesterday. We talk every week some hockey, and I do this. I do it with Spath. I do it with you. I do it with Bakes. The interesting thing with Bakes. The last couple of weeks, his take on Brandon Nerado, right? And so he said, you know, hey, you know, he's done this has been a good season, but I'm not sold. There's some missing things that I don't see on defense. He inherited a really strong team. I think it's premature to say that he's the guy. You know, people I talk to, and I think you should look around. And that's, you know, that was kind of a. You know, it seemed like messaging to me, so it made me wonder. I know you guys are in the hockey family network and talk to people. Is there a sentiment within the Michigan hockey ethos that says, hey, you know what? Need to be looking around. Need to be doing a national search and not automatically going to turn around. I don't know, but it was conspicuous to me to hear Bakes, kind of offer that almost unsolicited last week.
That's the first I've heard of it. I mean, to me, you look at this team and they got a lot of talent, but also this is the first year of what looks like Michigan's ongoing 2-year cycles where they had, you know, Beniers and Power and everybody for that first year where they were freshmen. They were okay. They weren't great. They made the tournament, but they weren't the number one overall seed. They were the number one overall seed the year after. And this year, Michigan is basically locked into a one seed despite what happened with Steve Holtz, despite having tons of injuries, not having Frank Nazar for most of the season, missing Adam Fantilli for 6 or 7 games, missing Truscott down the stretch, missing Luke Hughes for big chunks of this season. So they're not great defensively, but I mean, I honestly, if you look at it, I think that you've seen Eric Portillo regress a great deal. You know, I think Nerado is forward thinking. I think he's been on the wrong end of a lot of iffy calls this season, and he's kept his cool for the most part. He's recruited excellently. despite being an interim coach, he's picked up three or four guys who would be the equivalent of five-star prospects in football. The team seems to love him. You've got reports from people in the NHL who are like, yeah, this is the best system we see outside the NHL. So that would be shocking to me, except for the way that the Mel Pearson stuff went down. Yeah. Like, that's the one thing that is like, well, maybe people aren't seeing this the way I'm seeing it, but I have no idea how you would not give him the full-time job, given the job he's done under a lot of adversity, both on and off the ice. So, I mean, to me, that's insane.
I got to get this in real quick, Sam. I got to get this in. So, go and read our guy Alex Drain wrote an awesome article yesterday about how Michigan developed their response to Ohio State. Ohio State plays a pressure system. They put a lot of guys into your zone when you have the puck, trying to get out of the defensive zone. And he showed exactly how Michigan was able to break through that. And that's coaching. That's the way this team has developed over the course of the season is not just their youth. It's not just, you know, their young guys and getting better or whatnot. Nerado is actually doing some really cool things. And I want you to go read that article because it really demonstrates the way that the thinking that's behind this team. And with a young team, thinking is kind of hard because you have to work on fundamentals so much. So the fact that they're doing that kind of high-level stuff that you see in, like, the NHL playoffs is really impressive.
Got to be quick, Craig. Got to be quick.
Yeah, no, I 100% agree. I'm all in for Nerado. I'm shocked to hear what John said. I mean, I'm sure someone has given him that information, and it's not there's merit or there's a predicate to it. I echo Seth's commentary about Alex's article. I read it carefully, and boy, you couldn't look at the game against Ohio State and not say, wow, they've completely responded to the problems they had with OSU's forechecking in the other games this year and responded in a positive way. And I agree with Brian that part of our problems this year has been a regression in goaltending. And even with that, this is a number one seed probably in the NCAAs. And I think they have as good a chance as anyone is winning the national championship. So no, I'm not talking about this team, going in a different direction. I think Nerado makes complete sense. And that's where they should
go. It's a plum job. I imagine they've gotten some calls is why, right?
Yeah, I'm sure of that.
All right, guys, that'll do it for us today. Enjoy your tourney action. Be sure to join me over at Fraser's Pub starting at 1 o'clock. I'll be there until 3 with all the March Hoops action. That'll do it for us here on the Michigan Insider, live from UTEC. Sports Talk 1050, WTK, The Ticket, the official voice of University of Michigan Sports Ann Arbor, a Cumulus station.